Hello and welcome to the Heritage Langham podcast, episode 8. I'm Heather Payton. This month, the women history doesn't mention.
The traditional power dynamics was that the man was in control and obviously the woman was to obey. For many, it simply wasn't acceptable to take orders from a woman.
And how to grow your own app.
Basically, I've taken the original illustration and cut elements out of it so that I can animate it. So, for instance, I've cut out tears so that they look like they're rolling down her face.
Now, one of the problems with history is that it tends to record only the lives of important people, and mostly men. And unless they really made the wrong sort of dent in the history books, probably rich men. At Heritage Langham, we're trying to put that right in our own small way, starting with a woman you may have heard of, Matilda, Flemish wife of William the Conqueror, whose 1066 invasion force included men from her side of the family. But there's also another woman, rather less well-known, Mabel, wife of Hugh the Fleming, who lived in Haverford West in the 1200s, and who appears fleetingly in the town's property records. All will be explained in a moment. But both feature in different ways in the tapestry that's currently being stitched in the village, 6 panels depicting the part played by the Flemish incomers in our history. Local historian Dr. Simon Hancock knows about both Matilda and Mabel, and he started by telling me why he thought Matilda was special.
She comes across as being a very formidable individual. I think in the 1970s it was mentioned that it was calculated from part of her skeleton that she was 4'2" in height. That's been more or less sort of disproved now, although she possibly wasn't much more than 5 feet in height. She was very diminutive, but what she lacked in stature, I think you could say she more than made up for in terms of ability and character. And her marriage to William in 1051, I mean, it seems it really was a love match, because she had far more sort of royal connections than he had. He was the illegitimate son of the Duke of Normandy, whereas she had the blue blood of the kings of France surging in her veins. And she bore William the Conqueror at least 8 children, and of course 2 of them were kings. You had William Rufus, William II, and of course Henry I as well. So she was a remarkable individual in her own right.
And she was special for other reasons as well, wasn't she? The way she looked after William's affairs when he was not around.
I think it's a measure of the trust and confidence that William had in his wife, that she looked after his affairs when, of course, he went on the invasion of England in October 1066. She was looking after affairs in Normandy. And, of course, when William was absent from England, she was more or less sort of regent, de facto regent in England when he was abroad.
And how much power would she have had both in England as regent and in Normandy?
Well, I think the power was considerable, because really Parliament was a very sort of nascent organisation. So the only sort of structure that the king would have relied on was the council of the great magnates and nobles of the land. There was no sort of structure, really, constitutional structure that we would have known that would have really inhibited the king or queen's regal power and authority.
So she was basically running the place?
Absolutely.
So what would have been the attitude of the court and of nobles and the other people who would have had access to the king? Here they were being told what to do by a woman.
I'm sure that that disturbed many consciences, especially of, in a very sort of brutal age. It's almost difficult from a 21st century perspective to put your mind back to the mindset, the mental furniture of somebody who's living in the 12th century. I mean, it's almost impossible to do, because people's upbringing and outlook would have been so unimaginably different from what we understand today, where what was accepted, what was considered acceptable was so different. But obviously, you know, the traditional power dynamics was that the man was in control and obviously the woman was to obey. Even though she was of regal status, it still was desirable to have a man rather than a woman. And of course, the Civil War, which occurred in England after the death of Henry I between Stephen and Matilda, showed that for many, it simply wasn't acceptable to take orders from a woman.
How unusual was she then? Because certainly other women of noble birth would have run their husbands' estates when they were away at war or at court or whatever. So how unusual was Matilda?
Well, I think it probably was unusual because it's an early part of our post-Norman history. But one hasn't got to go too far to find remarkable women in their own right. You've got perhaps the greatest example is Eleanor of Aquitaine, who was the wife of Henry II. But then you've also got people like Eleanor of Castile, who was married to Edward I, who had a great deal of interest in Haverford West, and she was notorious for being very, very money-grabbing and very litigious, and she got her husband to get her the lordship of Haverford.
These are women, of course, of high social status, and we don't really know much about the others, do we? That's one of the problems, that women don't appear in the records.
One of my great interests is looking at those that have never really had their stories told, and as far as women are concerned, much of what they considered, what they did, perhaps wasn't considered noteworthy, and so it wasn't recorded. Although we do have glimpses, even in local archives, of the lives of women. For example, we've got that wonderful reference to Mabel, who was the wife of Hugh the Fleming in 1288. So they were property owners, probably middle class, the merchant community. But then even going into the 15th century, you've got a woman called Rose Skeddy. We know nothing about her except that she was buying and selling wine in 15th century Haverford, and of course she was making £2 or £3 on each transaction, which doesn't sound much to the modern ear, but actually 3 or 4 of those would have been, you know, a year's wages or a year's salary. So we do have glimpses of the lives of women, and I find them particularly interesting because they're the exception rather than the rule.
And talking about Hugh the Fleming and Mabel, his wife, what sort of life would they have led, or what sort of life would Mabel have led if they were merchant class?
Well, I think, you know, the merchant class in Haverford in the 13th century, the town is prosperous. It's one of the most prosperous times in its history, based on the flourishing wool trade. And even in the 13th century, it's a town of considerable wealth. The merchants would have been living in, you know, significant vernacular houses made of stone. Some of them would have been stone. They would have had servants. They would have ate well. They would have dressed well. And of course, Mabel, being the wife of Hugh the Fleming, who was a property owner, would have had a life of, we wouldn't say considerable privilege, but she would have had a decent and comfortable existence.
Dr. Simon Hancock, local historian and curator of the Haverford West Town Museum. Now, I said that both Matilda and Mabel play a part in the tapestry. We see Matilda in the first panel, as portrayed by local artist Fran Evans, tearfully waving goodbye to William as he sets off to invade England, and she gets on with the business of running the country. You may know that when the tapestry goes on display in the church in the autumn, you'll be able to download an app for smartphones and tablets which elaborates on the story with expert interviews, film and pictures. And of course, there'll be a narrator, which is where Mabel comes in. I confess we may have put words in her mouth. She is now around 700 years old, of course. But when you meet her, I think you'll agree she's a feisty woman with her own strong views. We went to see the people helping us put the app together and bring her to life, and they explained how it's done.
I'm Delis Penny, and we're at Wright Media. We do multimedia development, including web development, app development, animation. We do a lot of work in tourism and also sport and general marketing.
Well, Maggie Webelder, we can probably describe you as the project manager for our little project. Tell me a little bit about how you do this, because to me it looks a lot like making a television film. You've got a narrator and you've got a script and you've got bits of stuff you stick in. So tell me how that works.
There are elements of that within the app. So we are taking, as you said, elements of narrative and some video clips. We've got audio, illustrations. They're all going to be combined. So there's going to be a video, but that needs to sit inside a platform. We need to get that into users' devices, and they need to be able to access it. And we need to make that accessible in a user-friendly manner, and make it so that people can work their way through it without it being difficult and
So basically you're talking about doing something that people can then get on their smartphones or their tablets and watch as they're looking at the tapestry.
That's it.
So what have you had to do with our app? What are the steps that you've taken with that? We've given you a script and we're going to give you lots of clips of experts talking, and we're going to have other still pictures, and we've got Fran's wonderful art. Now, what do you do with all of that?
In a minute, I'll introduce you to Shan and Dave, who are doing some amazing work. They take the images and the audio in all the different languages. They draw some more pretty pictures, not as good as Fran's. So they do the layout and the designs, so the pathway that your users will experience as they're going through the app. And then Dave will program it, so he takes Shan's pictures and he makes it into a program which they download to the device, the end user will, and they actually overlay the audio, the narrative, onto the images. And Shan has actually animated some of Fran's amazing images, which we'll go through that with you in a minute.
Well, we had a quick look before and it is fantastic. And I'd love to know how she does it.
Should we go and talk to her?
Let's do that. Well, I'm now here with Shan. It's Shan Sims, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
We've got the image number one up. Now, this is the one people will see first of all when they're going through the tapestry. And this is a picture that Fran has drawn, and it's got Matilda, who's the wife of William the Conqueror, and she is waving goodbye to him. Now, tell me what you've done with it.
Basically, I've taken the original illustration and put it into a digital program and cut elements out of it, so that I can animate it. So, for instance, I've cut out tears so that they look like they're rolling down her face, and then elements of the sea, so the waves, so that they look like they're rolling beneath the boats, so that the boats actually look as if they're moving away.
It looks as though it would be incredibly difficult to do. It's very fiddly, isn't it?
It is quite a fiddly job, but I enjoy doing it, so it's quite nice as well.
You'd get quite engrossed in it, wouldn't you?
Yes, you do get engrossed.
And the other things you've done, you've got Matilda waving.
Yes, I have. She's waving goodbye to her husband, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was quite a nice illustration.
Yeah. And other ones, you've got animals moving and you've got all sorts of things happening. How long did all this take you?
It didn't take as long as you would think. But I think the initial one, so this first one probably took the longest. Mm. It took a few hours. And then once you get into the into the swing of it, then it's far easier to do the other illustrations.
What's your background? I mean, it looks as though you've got a lot of the artist in you.
I'm a graphic designer, but I've become web designer. So I am mostly digital design.
And Fran's images are, well, they were partly largely drawn by kids, school kids. Is that easy to work with? Because they're very sort of basic, innocent sort of pictures.
I think that made it a bit easier to work with, to be honest, because it was quite, the images being quite crude, they're far easier to animate than, say, if they weren't.
Yeah.
Because, you know, things can look a bit out of place then, and it's okay if the animation isn't quite straight or like it might look like it's going a little bit the wrong way, but I think that's okay because of the crudeness of the illustration in the first place.
I'm Dave Penny and I'm the app developer at Wright Media. At the church there will be half a dozen or so pre-installed apps on devices, so users can just pick up a tablet or a phone and go and download the content. If you have your own smartphone, it's as easy as going to your relevant app store and searching for the app. Once the app's downloaded in a couple of minutes, you can click on the app and it'll automatically launch. On launching the app, you can set up your language preferences, and once that's done, you're ready to go.
And it's pretty easy then, by the sound of it.
The main screen, you'll have the list of tapestries, so it's as simple as clicking on the image and going into that relevant content.
Dulles, how soon is all this going to happen? When are we going to be able to do this? I mean, I know we've got to finish the tapestry first of all, but how soon after that will we have all this ready to go?
Well, we're at the stage now where we are fine-tuning the storyboarding. A lot of the initial animations have been done. The scripting is all now approved and done and recorded. So the next stage for us is just completing some more animations from the lovely resources that we've had from Fran.
So the tapestry is going to go up in October and you'll be finished this quite a long time before that.
Yeah, that's the aim, because obviously what we want to do is we want to complete everything, and then we want to go through our beta testing and make sure that the user experience is as good as it needs to be. And so if we have a deadline of July, August for getting that those stages done, then that does give us September to do all that fine-tuning. And then it takes a couple of weeks to go onto the App Store, be approved, and once that's done, it's good to go.
Dulles Penny of Right Media, based appropriately for us near Roche, ancestral home of the founding Della Roaches. We too are good to go. We're back as ever next month. So until then, thanks to the Heritage Lottery Fund and our other financial supporters. And thanks to you for listening.